Okay, Tezvav Amid Aleph, 15a2, first column, or maybe like 15 lines down, which says Rabbi Yehuda Eimer. Rabbi Yehuda says, in the Mishnah it speaks about appraising land. So Rabbi Yehuda says one of the three appraisers of the land has to be a Kohen. Chachamim hold it doesn't have to be a Kohen, and Rabbi Yehuda holds one of the three have to be a Kohen. So Amalei Rapapa Rabayis, Rapapa said Rabayis, Bishleim Rabbi Yehuda, it makes sense according to Rabbi Yehuda. That's why in the Pasuk it says Kohen. And that Pasuk says the word Kohen to teach us one has to be a Kohen. El Rabbanan, but according to the Chacham, let's say, you don't need anybody to be a Kohen. Kohen Lamalu, why does the Torah need to word, say the word Kohen? The Gemara says, Kasha. You have a question. But it's interesting. When the Gemara, we find it's coming up in a few more places. When the Gemara asks a question and the Gemara answers Kasha, it means, okay, you have a problem, go figure it out. When the Gemara says Tufta, that means you refute him. But Kasha doesn't mean you're refuted just because you don't have an answer to the question. That's the difference between Kasha and Tufta, according to the rules in Shas. Tufta means you refute the guy, he's wrong. Kasha means the halacha could still be like him, you have an issue, so go deal with it.
What's his teiku then?
No, teiku is when there's a question that we don't know the answer to. A shaila, what's the halacha in this case? Here, Kasha means a difficulty from a contradiction. So okay, then it says...
The teiku you have no possible answers, but with Kasha you have possible answers.
No,
teiku is a question in halacha.
Yeah.
Is the halacha like this or like this? And the Gemara says, we don't know.
Okay.
Kasha means, you said a statement, I contradict you from a different place.
No.
It's a whole different story. Now we're asking what the halacha is.
Oh, it's not a halacha issue.
No, it is a halacha issue, because the guy said halacha, and we ask a question from a different Gemara.
Okay,
but just because Gemara says Kasha does not mean that you're wrong. Tufta means you're wrong. Teiku means we don't know the answer. By the way, even when the Gemara says Teiku, when the Gemara asks the Shaila, we don't know the answer. Yeah, that Tishbi Yitar the Mashiach will come. So there's still rules in Allah how it goes. For instance, if it's a Teiku in monetary issues, so the money stays by the owner. And if there's a Shaila, can you extract money in this case? And the Gemara says Teiku. Okay? So what do we do? Bottom line, what's the din? Because the Gemara doesn't know, so the money stays by the owner. If the Gemara asks a Shaila, are you allowed to do something? And the Gemara says Teiku. Right? What's the halacha? If it's biblical, you're strict. If it's rabbinic, you're lenient. There's always a halacha when it comes to Teiku. The Paskin do Paskin halacha, because there's other guidelines that are involved.
But the reason why they use a claim is because out of respect.
Because the Torah says exerts a cost basis.
You may not have any knowledge of appraising at all.
Yeah, but obviously it has to be a claim that knows appraising.
And kasha, how do you pass him when there's a kasha?
No, it depends. So like any other argument in the Gemara. Okay, then it says like this. The Mishnah said, Hakakois tishav a kohen, that if you want to appraise lands, you need 9 and a kohen. Okay? Gemara says, "Mino ani mili." Where do we learn this out from? That you need 10 people and 9 of them, one kohen and 9 men. Amr Shmuel, so Shmuel says like this: "Asara kohenim ksuvim bepasha." It says the word kohen 10 times in the parsha about appraising land. Yeah, chadu gufa, one to teach us that one of them has to be a kohen, but now we have 9 extra ones, right? 9 extra kohenim. So it's a exclusion after an exclusion. It's an interesting halacha. Double negative makes a positive, right? In math, double negative makes a positive. In Torah, an exclusion after an exclusion is an inclusion. Huh? So like this case, the Torah says, when appraising land, the Torah says 10 times the word kohen. Okay, now, one word kohen, you need for itself, there has to be a kohen. But there's 9 extra words. That means, when the Torah says kohen, 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 you're excluding everybody else. So the fact that there's so many exclusions of everybody else means we include everybody else. So therefore, 9 Yisraelim and 1 kohen. So the Gemara says, What does it teach us? Afilu tes Yisrael ve'echad kain. Nine Yisraelim and one kain is good. So maskul or avuna b'reid rav nosen, maybe five and five. How do you know you can have one kain and nine Yisraelim? Maybe the Torah wants us to have five kainim and five Yisraelim. How do you know it's nine and one? Maybe it's five and five. And again, the Gemara says, Kosh, okay, you have a question. That doesn't take away from the din, though. The Mishnah says clearly the din is nine Yisraelim and one kain.
House scores with the land, right?
Huh?
The house scores under the same category.
Yeah. We're going to soon see even about, the Gemara is going to talk about Avadim, Karka, yeah.
I'm a little bit confused.
I'm a lot confused.
Before we were talking about one out of three needing to be...
No, that's not about land, though. That wasn't about land. That is, the Mishnah says over here, Metautalin, Bishloisha, yeah. And Yehuda said one of them a kain. Then the Gemara said, by land, you need more. It's harder to appraise land. So.
But then going back to one out of three, halach is always like the Rabbanan, and the Rabbanan say you don't even need a kain.
Right.
And the Pasuk says.
So the Gemara asks, what do you need the word kain?
There's no reason for the
But halach is still like the Rabbanan.
And in this case, also you don't even need one out of ten?
No, you need the Gemara. The Mishnah says, the Mishnah says, in karka,
you need one out of ten.
There's nobody arguing about it, even.
Okay. So here, the Rabbanan say you do need one out of ten.
Yeah.
At least one out of ten.
Yeah.
What if another time Tochem is a Kohen, he can be in it? Or Dafke has to be Israel?
No, not Dafke. Even nine Israel.
Has to be Tam Tochem?
Not a Tam Tochem. A guy who knows how to appraise. Talmud Chacham in appraisals.
Experts in land.
You don't want a Talmud Chacham that doesn't know what land looks like.
Experts in land.
Yeah.
Rabbi. They go according to the size of the land.
Appraising the value of the land.
The size of the land.
Let me tell you something. In Oklahoma, you could buy a big piece of land for $10. An acre of land in Oklahoma probably goes for $10. An acre of land, they give it to you for free. An acre of land in Beverly Hills is $15 million, $20 million. So it depends.
Depends on the location too, right?
Sure, yeah, location, sure. Location, location, size.
Location.
How fertile the land is.
Yeah.
The better lands, worse lands.
After the seismic zone or not.
In fact, there's a whole section in Baba Basra, the Gemara talks about when there's inheritance. Yeah? Let's say a father owned a piece of land. Okay, and now you need to divide it. Yeah? Or there's two lands. One was good and one was not so good. How do you divide the land? Or if there's a river going this way, this way. How do you divide the land? You know, all these dinim, how do...
What's the value?
The restaurant opened. Okay, then the Gemara says like this. V'adam k'yetzibam. A person also has to be appraised by 10. Okay, now this again. The Gemara is going to ask a question. We know erchin. Remember if a guy says erki alai?
We've not done before.
What? No. By erchin, the Torah goes by age.
Right.
The Gemara is going to discuss what does it mean, how can a person make himself hegdish without erchin? And erchin, the Torah clearly states what the value is, depending on gender and age. The Gemara says, Adam mikadosh, can a person become holy that you have to estimate to appraise his value? I mean, how does it work? It can't be.
What's the question here? The Torah says it, so why are we...
The Mishnah says, in order to appraise the value of a person who makes himself hegdish, you need 10 people.
But the Torah says how much is...
That's what the Gemara is asking. The Gemara's question is, how do you have a case that a guy makes himself hegdish that you need to appraise him? Because if it's normal erchin, then the Torah has a clear cut, the price. Rabbi says, speaking, domai alai. Now, erchin, the guy has, it depends what you say. By erchin, the din is, by evaluation, the guy says, erki alai. If he says, erki alai, my value is upon me, yeah? Then the din is, if he's this age, it's this amount, and this age, this amount, male, this amount, female, this amount. Here, he didn't say erki alai. He says, domai alai. My value is upon me. So now, where do we see such a thing works? The Tanya, because it says, ha'emer domai alai. If a guy says, he makes a vow, that whatever I'm worth, I'm donating to the Beis Hamikdash. So how do you evaluate the value of a person? We evaluate him, like we learned before, an Evid sold in the market. Okay? And therefore, you ask to evaluate him that way. So why do you need 10 people? So the Gemara says, the Evid is Kushla Karkois. One second. In Gemara, we learned this in Kedushin a lot, that Evid, a slave, is likened to land. The Torah likens slaves to land. And therefore, there's all the dinim that apply to land apply to an Evid. And therefore, bottom line is, just like the appraisal of land needs 10 people, and one of them a Kayin. So a person, meaning an Evid, I mean not an Evid, because the person says, what I'm worth, I'm donating to the Beis Hamikdash, and you have to evaluate it based on the Evid sold in the market. So you need an Evid, like Karka, so you need 10 appraisers.
What is the meaning of Adam Mikodosh? Why can't a person...
Because in the Torah, when it says Erkiolai, there's a set value. What other case of Hegdash of a person?
The word Kodosh. I mean, why can't a person dedicate himself...
That's not what it means. He says, I'm donating to the Beis Hamikdash what I'm worth.
So what is the word Kodosh?
That's what it means. Hegdash. I'm making something Hegdash.
Did
monitor say you could
donate? What?
You're worth what you give.
No. Not by this.
What was the basis of the war coming from? Yeah. Like strength or
Evid?
Yeah.
There was a market, whatever he would get on the market.
No, based on what?
It depends, usually on strength. Okay.
What if it was like craftsman or something?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Sometimes it depends what they were looking for. If the craftsman and people on the slave market valued more a craftsman, so then he would get more. It's not Kabbalah. Whatever, he would be sold on the slave block.
It's the demand, supply
right.
And demand.
Right. Boy, Rabab and Aban ask a shayla. This is an interesting question. Sad Oimid Ligzeis. A guy people years ago would grow hair to a certain length and then they cut it. Yeah, it depends where. So people used to let their hair grow long and then they cut it. Now, hair has a value. You can make a sheitel out of it. Well, the Rashi says they would make, what did they make out of it? A sieve or a cloth or a band, whatever. Nowadays you can make a wig out of it, yeah?
That long hair was disgusting.
It is. That's why when it got very long, they cut it. Somebody now, the case over here is like this. A guy says, the value of my hair, I'm giving to the Beis Hamikdash. The hair is ready to be cut, meaning it's the length that normally was cut, but it's not cut yet. So it's still connected to the person. Is that called connected or not connected? I'll explain. The boy is going to explain the question in a second. Boy Rabab, Sada Oimid Ligzis, hair that is ready to be clipped, meaning it's long enough that, you know, it's ready, the size to be clipped. And a guy wants to donate that to the Beis Hamikdash. Now, obviously, you have to give money. You can't give your hair. What's the Beis Hamikdash going to do with hair? So therefore, is it Kugaz's dummy ubishleisha? Is it considered as if it's cut already and it's a movable object, and therefore you need three appraisers? Or a kumchuber dummy, or is it considered still connected to the body, so it has a din of connected? And the basari, you need 10. Now there is a rule in halacha. We're going to see this as we go along. Something fit to cut many times is considered cut. The question over here, what's the case in this din? Is it considered cut already because it's fit to cut? And therefore, cut hair has a din of movable items, metaltalin, and therefore appraisers enough of three appraisers? Or do we say that because it's connected to the body, it's still connected, it wasn't cut yet, so therefore it has a din like a karka, like land. And therefore you would need 10. That's Gemara's question. By the way, it's interesting then. If you cut your hair on Shabbos, If you take a haircut on Shabbos with the scissors, you transgress a biblical malacha of harvesting, of kreitzer.
It's connected.
I understand, but the person that connected to the ground, why isn't the whole thing metaltalin?
Yeah, exactly.
Because
it's a life source?
Because Adam is likened to Eved, and Eved is likened to Karka, and you cut your hair while with the scissors. If you pull out your hair with your hand, it's rabbinically forbidden. But if you cut your hair with the scissors, now I'm just bringing out that if this hair is connected to the person, then for sure you need tent to appraise it, because it's like karka. The question over here is, because it's fit to cut, it's considered cut, and therefore maybe three is enough. We mentioned last time, that, you know, wheat that gets in touch with water, it becomes chametzik, right? Now, obvious, in order for wheat to grow, you need to water it. You need rain, and you have to irrigate. I mean,
after harvest.
No, 1 second. No, that's not. So the din is, by the way, once the wheat is ready to be cut, and it rains, that wheat's going to become chametz, even though it's not cut yet.
Oh.
That's exactly what I'm saying, like similar to this din. Oh. So when they cut the wheat for matzah, they cut it before it ripens.
Not fit to cut.
No, they cut it before it's fit to cut.
Before.
And then they let it ripen off the ground. And then they protect it, you know, that it shouldn't get wet. Because once wheat is ready to be cut, many times it's considered cut.
So all those matzah shmurot, they have done it like that?
Yeah, sure.
And non-shmurot, they don't always observe that? Or they?
No, they start washing it from the grinding, not from the growing. Okay, anyway. So he says like this. So the question was, hair that's fit to be cut, is it considered cut or not? That's basically the Gemara's question. Tashma, so Gemara says, I'll prove it to you. It says, Hamagdish is avdei, if somebody sanctifies his eved for the Beis HaMikdash, ein me'ilin bay, you don't do me'il in it. Me'ila, when you misuse, you know, the Beis HaMikdash's objects for your personal use, so you have to pay principal, plus an additional fifth, which means a quarter, plus you have to bring a carbon me'ila. The whole section of Chumash. Now, by land, whatever, they learn out from a pasuk, there's no me'ila by land. There's no me'ila by land. If somebody misuses land of Hegdish, let's say somebody plays soccer on a field that belongs to Hegdish. So then it's because it's karka, there's no me'ila. Okay, to give you an example, if the Beis HaMikdash was on a soccer ball, and somebody played soccer with the soccer ball, the Beis HaMikdash, they would have to give me'ila. Pay the principal, plus a fifth, plus a carbon, and so on.
You just said no.
By land.
So.
A ball is not land.
Oh, they
you know what a ball
play,
is?
They, against well, a they have soccer. To play somewhere.
I'm talking if somebody uses... So what? If there's a ball, a soccer ball of Hegdish, and somebody takes it and plays soccer with it in the bathroom, what's the difference? It's a me'ila.
Right.
Now, so therefore, because we learned... People are likened to land. Okay? So if somebody makes his eved hegdish, and then he uses the eved for personal usage, there's no me'ila. Because it's land. The land, there's no me'ila. But Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, Meilim Besari. If you use the eved's hair, there is me'ila. Well, I mean, the Kai Malon. And we explained that Mishnah by saying that what's the argument between Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim? The Besari Ha'emid Ligzeis Pligi. They're arguing on hair that's ready to be cut. So therefore, like this, the Chachamim hold, you don't do Me'ila by an Eved, including the hair, because it's still connected. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, because the hair is ready to be cut, it's considered cut, so therefore it's not the person, it's not land. It has a din of monetary objects, so you have a din of me'ila. So what do you see from here? This Rabbin's question about is it considered cut, is it considered hair, what's ready to be cut, is it considered land that you need 10 appraisers, or is it considered cut already, and therefore it's monetary, movable, which needs 3, is really the argument between Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim. And the Gemara says, okay, that's what?
Right, how can you make that connection of a free person to a slave? Or a slave is known to be property, but a free person is not property. So how could you even compare a
But the Gemara learns in Kedushin that not only an Eved is karka because people are karka.
Oh. But it says only Eved Kanani.
Oh? Huh?
It says.
Yeah, Eved but Kanani. This. Yeah, Eved Kanani as far as. But as far as Hegdish goes, or cutting the hair, the person has a din of karka, like we said. If you cut your hair on Shabbos, yeah, it's called keitzer. If you take a haircut with a scissor, we just said, yeah? Mm-hmm. Why are you chayev? If I cut this tablecloth, or if I take cut hair, hair that's already cut, yeah, and cut it. Take a wig and cut it. Yeah, rabbinically you're not allowed to. But I didn't cut it. I didn't harvest. Because it's not connected. Harvesting is when you cut something connected. Right? Cut hair is not connected. So in this din, a person has a din of karka anyway. About the hair. When you're talking about hair versus the person in reference to the hair has a din of land.
But biologically there is a distinction between a hair because once it comes out of the thing, it has no connection to its root. Whereas harvesting, if it's green, it's still being connected to the ground because there is communication through the water that is coming off the ground to the grain, let's
but
say.
It's ready to be cut. It's fit to cut.
Once something's fit to cut, it's a cut. Well, that's the shaila. That was the argument to Rav Shimon Gamliel on the Chacham.
It's alive. It's what I'm trying to say.
Doesn't matter. It does not connect it to the ground.
Something like a tzomeach,
if you cut a branch off the tree, yeah?
It's connected.
No. And then you afterwards, okay, so that you did kaitzer. But what happens if it's a cut branch and you cut it? You're not even kaitzer. Rabbinically,
right.
Yes.
Right.
If you're walking in the street, you know, you walk by a bush, people like to rip off a leaf and Shabbos, that would be chayiv min ha-Torah, biblically forbidden. Okay, so, but in this respect, the person is considered land, because if you harvest hair, I'm using the word harvesting, if you cut hair, you're harvesting. So now the question is, what Rababin asked, hair that's fit to cut, because it's fit to cut, is it considered cut? There isn't a considered cut. In reference to what is he asking? He's asking if it's the person, then you need 10 appraisers to evaluate it. If it's cut already, it's considered cut already, then it's movable, so you only need 3. So the question is, how you do with hair? Do you need 10 or do you need 3? So the Gemara brought a proof from Meila that because it's the same argument. Is the hair considered cut? Then there is Meila. If the hair is not considered cut, then it's connected to the person, it's karka, and then there's no din of meila.
Why, if it's cut, don't they sell it? And that's the litmus test of what the value. Why do you have to bring all these appraisers?
The question is, how many appraisers do you need to value it?
Appraiser, just sell it and it will...
No, you have to estimate how much the guy has to give for the hair. You're not selling the hair.
Oh.
So that you need to appraise, just like the land and the movable items. The terrorists, the Mishra learned... And we learn it out from Psukim.
We give it the value of it.
The value, but in order, because you don't want to rip off Hegdish. Hegdish is God. And their hand, by the way, in any dealing, don't deal with Hegdish. Because under any circumstance, they have the upper hand. If the price goes up, they gain. The price goes down, you lose. I mean, whatever it is, they never lose. Beis HaMikdash never loses. Okay, God, because God says, when it comes to my money, man, it's going to be full. So, we don't want to rip off Hagdish, so we need to appraise. When a guy says, I'm donating this table to the Beis HaMikdash, now obviously the Beis HaMikdash doesn't need this table. So they're going to have to evaluate how much the money is, and that'll give it what?
At the end of the day, he still has to pay money out of his pocket for that value of whatever that is. So why wouldn't they, for instance, say, I donate $10?
But he didn't say that. If he said, I donate $10, then there's no problem. That's not what the guy said. The guy said, I'm donating my hair.
Why would he
say
I'm
somebody say a stupid thing like that?
Why would they do that?
What? Say that again. Why do people say stupid things?
Yeah.
Most people say stupid things.
But why?
Once in a while somebody comes up with something smart.
They do neither.
I like it.
Then they couldn't auction it off instead of getting an appraisal?
No, the Torah says you have to. The Torah says you have to appraise it.
How can you auction it if you can't cut it? Your hair.
No.
A table or something else. When instead of getting somebody to appraise it, you say the highest bidder, whatever.
That's they right. Don't. It's no. It's degrading for Hegdish. So what they do is they appraise it, the highest appraisal, and then that's what they get. The guy has to give it.
Appraisal, not the average.
Probably is the highest.
And then they have to pay something to the appraisers.
No, there's voluntary. What?
I have two questions. What about if that item is not sellable, if there's no demand for it? The Beit HaMikdash will accept it?
The Beit HaMikdash will accept it. And again, the if a guy donates a cup to the Beit HaMikdash, so he has to give the cup to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. Now, if the Beis HaMikdash wants to sell the cup, because they don't need it.
There's no buyer.
So there's no buyer, so the Beis HaMikdash keeps it.
And if they can't throw it.
Put into the junk warehouse.
The second question. Back to a person who gets a haircut. So when he gets a haircut, what kind of melacha he did on Shabbos?
Harvest kaitzer.
The person who got the haircut, not the one who's cutting the hair.
The one that got the haircut?
Yes.
He's assisting the guy that's doing the malacha. So he's not biblically, he doesn't get killed, but he's biblically helping somebody sin.
Or what if that guy is not Jewish?
So he's still, but he's doing it for you, so that's rabbinically forbidden. So it's still forbidden.
The moral of the story is...
cut your own hair.
Rabbi, when he donates a cup to the Beit HaMikdash and Beit HaMikdash says, I don't need it, and the Beit HaMikdash sells it to somebody else, it's not holy, right?
No, once they sell it, the cup becomes unholy and the money becomes holy.
The money that goes to Beit HaMikdash.
If this belongs to the Beit HaMikdash, yeah? And they don't need it. Let's say it is worth $50, yeah? So the Beit HaMikdash. Now, if somebody says this is Hegdish, so this becomes holy. Right? If somebody misuses this, then you have this din of Me'ila. They have to pay a fifth and principal, and it's really a quarter, not a fifth. And bring a carbon, okay? But because this is holy. Now, if the Beis HaMikdash doesn't need it, so they sell it to you for $50. Right? So by selling it to you for $50, this becomes unholy. And your $50 becomes holy. Now, the $50 now belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. And this becomes unholy. So once the Beis HaMikdash sells it to you, it's yours. You can do with it whatever you want. It's not holy anymore.
And that $50 holiness value of it still becomes the benefit of the original person who gave it?
You mean, is it considered that he gave a donation?
No, I know that the guy...
No, here he's buying it. He's not donating.
But it still remains that $50 remain holy as donation of the original person who gave that item?
Yeah. Because this is worth $50. So he gave basically
$50. What about if somebody donates something beside hair? Like somebody is an artist or a craftsman.
Same thing.
He says, I give my hand. Is that... it's not ready to be cut.
I hope
not fit to cut.
No, so then it's the karka. It's KLA. He has to evaluate how much that hand is worth.
A painting.
How much the hand is worth as an artist.
So
there's a story in the Gemara. Reb Chanina ben Deisa was very, very poor. Okay, and he wanted to donate something to Beis HaMikdash. He had nothing to donate, but he found a big, beautiful rock. Big. But he couldn't schlep it, and he saw the Hashem sent down Malachim, whatever, and all of a sudden it was donated. I mean, yeah, people gave a lot of different things.
But the Midas doesn't need it, they can throw it away?
They're not going to throw it away because it's Hegdish, they'll try to sell it.
If they cannot sell it.
I don't know what they do with it. I don't know.
So, in case of the hand, it's 10 people, right?
Yeah. Because so the person needs 10 people.
Part of the
not if he says Arkei life, he says Dmei Yodai life. The may your dialogue, yeah.
They sell it on eBay.
Sell it on eBay, yeah. Okay, now the Gemara says, so we have a machleket between Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim, if hair that's ready to be cut, is it considered cut or not, right? Okay. So name Mahani Katanoi, the Gemara wants to see if, is there another similar argument that they really argue about the same thing? Name Mahani Tanoi, Kani Tanoi, L'chir Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim, should be arguing in a similar case of Rameir and the Chachamim. Because Rameir says like this. Yesh dvarim shein kakarka veinen kakarka. There are things that are similar to land, but in certain dinim they're not the land. Vein chachamim meidumai. The Gemara is going to explain. Rameir says there are certain things that in certain dinim are land, and certain dinim not land. And the chacham don't agree with him. What is Miketa? What's the case? Esi gefanim tounis mesartiloch. A guy says, I delivered 10 laden vines to you. Okay. V'alo oimat ein alochamish. I only gave you 5. Okay, I have to explain this din. There's a din in the Gemara B'Metzia, a famous din. Every kid in yeshiva knows this. It's called Meida B'Mikses. One of the 3 biblical oaths in Bez Din is Meida B'Mikses. Meida B'Mikses, let me explain the din. If I say to you, you owe me $100, and you deny it, no proof, no nothing, biblically, you're off the hook. Because I want to extract money from you, I have no proof, the burden of proof is on me. The Chachamim came along and said, you have to swear what's called Shvuas Heses. You have to make a rabbinic vow, oath that you don't owe me the money. Because normally the guy doesn't come to people and say, you owe me money. Okay, so obviously if the guy said it, there's something there. But there's no biblical oath. What happens though, if I say to you, you owe me $100. And you say, no, I owe you 50. So then the din is, it's a biblical oath. You have to pay the 50 that you admitted. And on the other 50, you have to swear that you don't owe it to me.
Biblical shvua.
Okay? There's 3 biblical shvuas. What?
What is a biblical shvua?
Biblical shvua was very spooky and scary. They darkened the room and they made it like ghost town. They made the atmosphere because it's one of the 10 commandments. They cease and the whole world shook when God said, don't mention my name in vain. Because when they swore on a Sefer Torah with God's name. Right. Okay? So, and they spooked the room. They made it dark with candles and they warned the guy, you better not lie. It's a biblical oath. Rabbinic oath was like more casual. People got more scared of a biblical oath. There's shamrim. If I gave you something to watch and it was stolen or lost, you have to swear that that's what happened. And then Eid Echad, if I say, you owe me $100, okay, and I don't have 2 witnesses, I only have 1 witness, so you have to swear against the witness that you don't owe me the money. Okay, but the third one that we're talking about here in the Gemara is, if I say you owe me $100, and you say, I owe you 50, you have to pay the 50, obviously you admit it, and you have to swear biblically on that. If you don't swear, then you have to pay it. You have the ability to swear and get out of it.
Some people actually...
Now, one second. On land, the Gemara learns out there's no oath on land. There's never... You ain't mishpan ala karka. You never swear on land. It's exeris kosov. The Gemara learns it out. It's a pasuk. You don't swear on land. That's it. If I say, I gave you 2 fields, you know, and you say no 1, there's no oath. You don't swear on land. That's what the Gezeres HaKosov.
Go to bed,
but the Bezin doesn't swear. So now this case is like this. A guy says, I gave you 10 loaded trees. And the guy answers back, no, you only gave me 5. So the din is, do you swear or don't you swear? Now, if it's land, the fruits on the tree are land, then you can't swear. If the fruits on the tree are movable items, then you do. Because he's not saying about the tree. He said, I gave you 10 fruit-loaded trees, and you said, no, you only gave me 5. So what do you... The dispute over here is not the trees. It's the fruit of the tree.
But
it's connected to the ground. One second. No, loaded means it's still on the tree.
I thought loaded
in
the truck.
Okay, let's see the case. Not loaded in the truck, loaded on the tree.
Did to be cut.
In the betin, do they swear like now?
No.
If they do, they don't?
Even Shvuas Heses, they don't do. They make a compromise instead. Okay, he says, like, okay, so what's the case? Esig fanim tounis mesatilach. I gave you 10 loaded fruit trees on the fruit. It's only 5. So Rameh says, you have to swear, as a regular made of a mixus. Chachamim say no. Kol mechubar lekarka, anything connected to the ground is like land, and therefore the fruits have a din of land, and on land you don't swear. So the Gemara says, what? So why does Rav Meir hold you have to swear? So the Amar Rabbi Yisrael Bar Chanina, Rabbi Yisrael Bar Chanina explains it. It's speaking anavim aim the slibatzer askinin, that the grapes are ready to be picked off the vine. So again, this is the same case what we're learning here. The grapes are ready to be picked. They're ripened already. Right? Now, the question is, are they considered cut yet? So a mayor holds, you have to swear because they're considered cut, and therefore they don't have a din of land anymore, they have a din of metaltal and movable items, and therefore it's made up of mixes, you need to swear. So he says like this, Mar Sava, the mayor holds, Kipsud is damia considered cut already. And therefore, they're like metaltal, and therefore you have to swear. Well, Mar Sava, Lav Kipsud is damia. And the Chachamim hold, no, they're still connected to the tree, they're still karka, and in karka you don't swear. So therefore you don't swear. So Adumar says, like, so l'chayre, this is the same argument as the hair with the me'ila, with the praising. And this. So Adumar says, like, no. Over there is different by the grapes. That means maybe Rav Meir normally agrees, even if it's ready to cut, it's not cut. Why by grapes does he hold that if it's ready to cut, it's cut? He said, because ad kan l'kame Rav Meir hosam, Kol kama de shavkalo, because the grapes, after they're ripened, the longer you leave them on the tree, they get worse. Michesh kachshe, they get worse. But sad, kol kama de shavkalo, the longer you leave your hair on your body, the hair gets better. It's longer. So he says like this, you can't compare grapes to hair. The Gemara wanted to say, just like by hair it's ready to cut, is it considered cut or not? So the same thing would be by grapes on the tree, yeah? So Gemara says you can't compare the two. Maybe by hair, even Rav Meir would agree that it's not considered cut. Why? Because the longer it's on your body, the longer the hair, the more valuable it is. But over there by grapes, maybe over there Rav Meir holds is considered cut, because the longer you leave them on the tree, the worse they're going to get, they're going to spoil. So maybe over there it's different.
Rabbeinu? How about women? Do women donate things to Beit HaMikdash?
All the time.
No, only if the husband lets.
What about unmarried?
Married women donate. Man, let's donate.
No, unmarried woman donate her hair.
No.
Could she donate?
So they evaluate how much the hair is. Yeah? If it's ready to be cut, the argument is 3 or 10. Yeah, but there needs to be a praise.
How old does this person have to be?
Over Bar Bas Mitzvah. Not only then, no, I'm sorry. Bar Bas Mitzvah for sure. Then there's called Smuchim Le'ish. That means between 12, the boy 12, between a boy the age of 12, between 12 and 13, or a girl 11 to 12, you check them out. If they know what they're doing, then even at 12 it becomes a vow, and 11 it becomes a vow. If they don't know what they're doing, I mean, if they don't understand what they're doing, then it's Bar and Bas Mitzvah. The year before Bar and Bas Mitzvah, the Chum had to check out the guy if they know what they're doing.
If the Anovim are not right,
then for sure everybody says it's connected to the ground. Then even Rav Meir would hold that you can't swear because it's karka.
That makes sense.
But the question over here is, because it's fit to be cut, is it considered cut or not?
The Anovim, even if it's ripe, you cut it and you let it sit, it will ripen. But that doesn't make any difference.
It's not the case.
No,
they don't.
It's so interesting. Biologically, if it's not ripe, it's still connected because it's still being nurtured through the ground.
That's not biologically, me. But whatever, yeah.
Physically. If it's ripe, it has no connection to the ground anymore. Nothing is really nurturing it.
Correct. But after it ripes, it's still, the shaila is, do we say that it's cut or not cut? That's the argument. Okay, back to the Gemara.
A married woman can give her,
he said,
if the husband lets.
But it's holy. If somebody sees it,
it's nakedness now. Remember the whole story with the Shaitlach from India?
Mm-hmm.
Many years ago, they had a public burning in Mishugoyim. Then they bought in Paskin, it's okay. So after they ruined about $1 million of Jewish money, that they right away burnt all the shit. No, the shail is in because India, the women in India have very thick hair. Right. And it's very good for wigs.
Very also bright.
But the problem was, a lot of the women in India would donate the hair for their idols. So now the shail, if a woman cuts the hair, and what did the idol places do with it? They were smart. They sold it for wigs. The women thought they would take the money, the wig, the hair, cut it. They would have very long hair. Then they cut it. You know, you have a long hair like this. It makes a good wig, and it's thick. It's really good hair they have. So they would donate the money for Avei Dezara, and then the idol worshipping place would sell it for wigs. So the question is, were those sheitlach considered offshoots of Avei Dezara, and therefore you're not allowed to wear them? So there's a lot of discussion.
So they
came out at a time that you're not allowed to wear them. So the whole Williamsburg and Muncie and Borough Park and Crown Heights
and Los Angeles.
Yeah, they're all made. So they had a public burning of all everybody sheitlach. You're talking. Imagine if you have 1,000 people burning $3,000 sheitlach.
Right.
That's what they go for, sir. The good ones. Yeah.
That's right.
See, you're saving money.
So
no, the beauty parlor costs more. So. Then afterwards they found out there are certain abundance that were makel, and they found out it wasn't necessarily true. It was a whole big fight in halacha. It still goes on. Since then they stopped buying from them.
Now they're buying European.
But isn't it true that item of idol worship, if you make a change in it, is no longer?
No, it's not true.
But if it goes to
the money had a din of Avei Dezara, whatever, the whole...
What about if they sell to an Italian company and the Italian company makes those wigs?
Yeah, but if you know they come from Avei Dezara, then...
How do you know that?
So that's the shaila. The whole question was, it's a suffix and it's a doubt.
You recognize.
There's a lot of responses written on that stuff.
They get mixed with
the
mixed, and they mix hair.
Going to mikveh doesn't change it. It's a serious question.
No. Avei Dezara, you have to throw away. You can't even benefit from it. The Gemara says you have to take it to Yam HaMelech, to the Dead Sea, where you throw it in and it can't be used anymore.
Well, the Peruma ladies in Iran used to
cover their hair
with a handkerchief.
Right.
That even one hair wouldn't show.
That's the way, halachically, that's the way it has to be.
That's the way it has to be,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know.
Yeah. Rabbi, what about selling like gold crosses and things like that?
That's jewelry. That's not...
That's allowed.
Because it wasn't worshipped. Avei Dezara is something which... For instance, if there's a big cross in a church, let's say, right? Yeah, and they, people bow to it. That you're not allowed to sell.
I think it's the statue itself that's the problematic.
Anything that people bow to is Avei Dezara, but nobody bows to the little jewelry pieces. So if a jeweler, say, has the, you know, sells jewelry and he has crosses, and that's not a problem.
What about if the gold came from these Avei Dezara people? From India or could be China?
No, it has to only be stuff that they actually did Avei Dezara with.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.